study that. You will find that no human being can ever go through so much opposition and afflictions. And yet Abdu'l-Bahá dealt with it personally with loving kindness, but for the community's sake with great firmness. And he said, those who were the breakers of the covenant, those who have arisen to destroy the cause of God, he announced them as covenant breakers, and we do not associate with them. That's all we do not do with the covenant breakers. You do not hate them, you do not fight with them, you do not try to destroy them, but we just do not associate with them. And this is a very important principle. Abdu'l-Bahá said it's like a disease, infectious disease, which the doctor will isolate you. I mean, this happens in life. The doctor isolates you if you have an infectious disease. And this is because, he said, if 1,000 healthy people go near that one defected person, that diseased person, they're all going to take this disease. The 1,000. That one person will not become better by associating with 1,000 healthy men. But 1,000 healthy men will become affected by one person who is diseased. You see, this process of covenant breaking, which did not exist in the past, but it was not dealt in the past. Nobody had the power, the authority to deal with those who break the covenant. Those who broke the covenant, if there was such a thing as a covenant. In Islam, there was a verbal arrangement or a verbal statement which was made by Muhammad, describing who should be the follower of Muhammad, who should be succeeding Muhammad. But his followers divided, and they disagreed, and they divided into two major sects. But they were both growing again. You know, there was no question of cutting anybody off. They were both Muslims of different sects. But in this age, anyone who have risen up against the center of the faith, he is cut off. He's cut off. And I will explain to you this process of covenant breaking and the process of throwing away somebody out of the faith, cutting him off, as I said, like a branch which deviates and you cut it off. And when you cut it off, it drops on the ground. And for a few days it may be green, maybe a little life in it. But eventually it'll perish. We don't have to fight them. We don't have to hate them. We don't have to do anything. But we do not associate with them. And the best example, again, to know this is to look at your own human body. The human body is the best example. If you look at the human body, you will find that a healthy person can always withstand any disease or germs or anything which comes from the outside. If you're healthy, you're not going to be affected by it. We always go through these germs and through these things. You always through all around us, it's full of germs and various things. But you get over it. But if ever you allow poison to enter inside your bloodstream and circulate, that's the end. You can't stand that. It will destroy you right away. And so the body has a system. The body has a machinery. The kidneys, this is the work of the kidneys. They inspect the bloodstream, if you like to call it. And they pick up anything which is poisonous. All the poisonous material are collected from the body, from the bloodstream. They won't let it go through the bloodstream. And at intervals, these impurities are thrown out. Isn't that right? If there was no kidneys, you know what happened to a person? Probably you would die after, I don't know, I'm not a doctor, a few hours. All the poisons is destroying you, that's the end. And so all the impurities are thrown out, and once it is thrown out, you feel healthy. This machinery. The hands of the cause, it's their function. To be vigilant, and if there is anyone who is a poison circulating within the community, they'll throw him out with the approval of the House of Justice today. In the future, they will devise a different system, perhaps. But there is a machinery. And it does not mean that anybody who opposes the faith in some ways, you throw him out in that way and you call him a covenant breaker. A covenant breaker is a person who opposes the center of the faith actively. For instance, you may find a person who says, look, I am not a Baha'i. I was a Baha'i, but I'm not a Baha'i. Okay, this is not a problem. You withdraw his name. And in fact, you will love him and you will help him. You will associate with him. Or a person may have broken some laws and his voting rights is removed from him. Still, you can associate with him. There's no problem there. He will one day may come back again into the faith. But a covenant breaker is a person who actively opposes the center of the faith. For instance, he says, I believe in Baha'u'llah, but I don't accept anything that Abdul Baha said, and I'm going to oppose it. Or somebody may say, I believe Baha'u'llah and Abdul Baha, as they did, but I will oppose anything the Shoghi Effendi will say. And I am a Baha'i, and I'm coming to your 19-day feast, and I'm going to oppose everything the Shoghi Effendi has said. I won't let that happen. Or somebody today might say, look, I accept all the writings, but I will not oppose anything that the House of I'll oppose anything that the House of Justice says. I'm coming to your 19-day feast, to your assemblies, to your communities, and I'm going to oppose everything they say. Well, this is the poison which is trying to circulate inside, and this we will not allow to happen. It's like a cancerous disease which happens. Sometimes you may go and the doctor says, I must cut your hand off right away. You won't object to that. You will welcome it. You say, all right, cut it off. Why? Because you know that if that cancer is allowed to remain there, it's going to destroy you. This is exactly what covenant breaking is. But fortunately, now we live at a time that we are talking about covenant breaking. Very few of them exist today who are opposing the House of Justice. Very few of them. And they are so... We are not worried about them. We are not doing anything with them. We are just leaving it to themselves. And as I said, we don't hate them. We don't associate with them. If they write me a letter, I will not answer them. I will not read it. I'll throw it away. It's poison.
The covenant breakers have, with every major change, the death of Baha'u'llah, and I'm totally offended.
Pardon?
The covenant breakers have arisen with every major change. With the death of the central figure, there won't be any more of that. The House of Justice won't die. It'll be the same as they used to.
I don't know. I don't know. There may well be. There are still some who oppose the House of Justice. I think as long as man, Shoghi Effendi mentions, he says that in every faith, people arose and divided religions into sects. They violated the covenants. In this age, he says, it's the same. People have violated the covenant, and in fact have violated it much more vigorously than any other previous dispensation. But he says the difference, and therefore probably this covenant breaking may be there till the end of this dispensation. But he says the distinguishing feature of this faith is that they have not succeeded in bringing division. They have dissipated themselves, and this is the true history of the faith. All of those things, people who rose up against the faith, where are they? Those covenant breakers of Abdul Baha, they are gone and forgotten and finished and part of the history. If you want to go to Akka to find out the grave of Muhammad Ali, who was the arch breaker of the covenant, you won't find it. You don't know where he is, even buried. If you go to those hundreds of people who rose up against Shoghi Effendi amongst his family and others, where are they? They're gone, finished, completely finished, without doing anything to them. They're gone. And today there may well be a few here and there. But one thing which is sure is that the cause of God will not become divided into sects. If you look at the history of other religions, you will find the sects were created immediately after the Prophet was gone. The body of Muhammad wasn't buried yet, that his followers were divided into two major sects and the fighting broke up amongst them right away. In this dispensation, this is why Baha'u'llah says this is a day that shall not be followed by night. Now I will explain to you in another way what covenant breaking is. Just on a basis of nature. In nature. What is in nature covenant breaking? Just to explain to you by using the laws of nature. As I said, from nature we learn everything. Really. First of all, do you know that... Look at nature. You will find always opposite things attract each other. The north pole of a magnet and the south pole of a magnet are opposites. They'll attract to each other. But the two similar poles, repulse. If you bring two north poles of a magnet together, there is a force of repulsion. Now, this is in nature. And it's the same thing in spiritually. God is one end, but the opposite to it is man, the opposite pole. God is sovereign Lord of all. The opposite to it is servitude, humility. You see, these are two opposite things. And these two things attract each other. God loves to see a servant. He is attracted to a servant. He attracts to himself. But if ever somebody wants to put himself on the same level as God, or when I say God, I mean say the manifestation of God, or the center of the covenant, it doesn't matter. If a person wants to put himself on the same level as Baha'u'llah, or put himself at the same level as Abdul Baha, or put himself on the same level as Shoghi Effendi, you know, the same level, there is a force of repulsion. This is covenant breaking. As long as you are a servant, there is no problem. But as soon as you want to bring yourself on the same level, knowing what this is, knowing this is a manifestation of God, having recognized Him, you want to bring yourself on the same level, immediately there is a repulsion. Now we want to know, how do we know we bring ourselves on that same level? How do I know that? How can we prove that Muhammad Ali, for instance, brought himself on the same level as Abdul Baha? How do we know that those who oppose Shoghi Effendi brought themselves on the same level of Abdul Baha? How can we say this? Now, there is one test for it. And the test, again, you will find in life. If I challenge you to fight with me, you and I have to be of the same strength, or else I would never dare to come and say, let us fight. You only fight with someone who is your equal or less than you. A child will never come and challenge a grown-up man. Or you and I would never challenge one of these boxers to come and fight with us, because we are not equals with them. If I oppose you, it means I bring myself on the same level, at least, because I'm opposing you, I'm challenging you. That is the way you can know it. When Muhammad Ali challenged Abdul Baha, he brought himself on the same level. And this is repulsion. When somebody challenges and opposes Abdul Baha or Shoghi Effendi, he puts himself on the same level. By virtue of opposing him, it is an indication that you consider yourself at least an equal. Otherwise, you wouldn't. That is how we know. Once they oppose, this is the criteria. Once they oppose the center of the cause, then this is covenant breaking. And that has to be established, by the way, by the center of the faith. Nobody can proclaim somebody a covenant breaker. Now, why I mention the importance of covenant breaking and steadfastness in the covenant is that we must not only look at the history of the faith in the past and all the covenant breakings, that's part of history, which give us a great courage in the faith. It's a great pride for us. A great joy and a pride. We can mention it with pride that so many people rose up against the faith, rose up against Abdul Baha, rose up against Baha'u'llah, rose up against, from within, rose up against Shoghi Effendi, tried to break the faith into pieces, and they did not succeed. And as Ruhiya Khanum once in one of her talks mentioned, she said, every one of these covenant breakings is a ribbon we wear in this battle. You know, a ribbon that you wear. A medal. Each one of them has proved the invincibility of the covenant of God, that you cannot break it through. even the most fierce onslaught which had taken place in the faith had not succeeded in breaking through this great ocean. So you see, and now look at what happened at the end. Now, I have no time in here to talk to you about this, and it's just coming to an end. But look at what happened when Shoghi Effendi passed away. When Shoghi Effendi passed away, the machinery of the covenant, this wall around this whole, the cause of God, was so strong that even though he had not left a will and testament, and I can tell you there was, we don't want to go into that, the great wisdoms of not writing the will and testament. You must not think the Shoghi Effendi forgot to write the will and testament. The great wisdom. And if he had written a will and testament, I'm not going to go into it, you would see that he could have violated some of the basic principles of our faith. Now, I am not at all prepared to go into this question now, because there is no time. It takes a good while to discuss this. Now we understand this. He could not have written. His hands were tied. And in spite of the fact that there were no will and testament, and in spite of the fact that the Baha'is were not only Persians who spoke the same language or only English, but that they were scattered throughout the length and breadth of this earth, coming from so many diverse backgrounds, and yet the faith of Baha'u'llah remained unshaken. The community remained unshaken. And when one of the hands came up, Mason Rimi, and he said, "Follow me," it was only laughable, the consequences. Where is he? Where is what's happened? It all evaporated into the air. The Baha'i community remained steadfast. It's just like every interval, the impurities were thrown out. That's all that happens. And it was a good thing. All the impurities, like the impurities of the body, which are thrown out every intervals. And even now, you said there are no possibility. You suggested there were no possibilities of covenant breaking. Well, there may be. There are always ambitious men. And somebody may come and say, "Well, now let us see what, you know, they may oppose the House of Justice." I don't know. There are already some who are doing it. Very few. You can count them with the fingers of your hand throughout the Baha'i world, really. Now, this is a stage that we have reached, and we have to be grateful to those souls who defended the covenant of God, who defended this cause. As I said, they rallied around Abdu'l-Bahá and Shoghi Effendi. You know, there was a time that Shoghi Effendi, not one member of his family remained faithful. Not one member of the family of Abdu'l-Bahá. They all rose up against him. And you might ask yourself, why is it that the person that... Now, this is the last thing I'm going to say, and this we close this meeting because it's getting late. The last thing I'm going to say to you. Often people may ask themselves this question: how is it that of all the people who should rise up against Abdu'l-Bahá, were his closest people, his family, his friends, his brothers, why should be that all the family of the master should rise up against Shoghi Effendi? They were the closest to him. You would expect that they wouldn't rise up against him. Now you see, this is a very significant thing to ask. Now the only way I can describe it to you is this: that if you were going to see a great scientist, say you and I were going to see a great celebrated scientist, say for instance, if Einstein was alive, we were all going to see him. Let's go and see him. Now, either you know mathematics or you don't when you go and see Einstein or someone like him. You either know mathematics or you don't. If you know mathematics, when you go there and you sit down and you listen, you see him on the blackboard working with his theories and all the formulas he has worked out, and you see the way he has come out with such genius way he has proposed his theories, you will be so carried away into the world of mathematics and physics that you consider him as the greatest man, and you come out of the room so excited that if anybody asks you what was he wearing, you don't know. What would he look like even, you may not know, because you were carried away with his theories. But if you didn't know mathematics, and you looked at what he's saying, and especially if you're sitting in the front row, now some of the people who are sitting in the front row have seen a lot of things, they would say, "Look at this man, look at his You won't understand what he's saying, but you can look at him very clearly because you're sitting very close to him. He would say, oh gosh, look at this fellow. His coat is not properly buttoned. His shoes are dirty. His hair is unkempt.